Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian, and I am here with a very special guest, someone who I've been talking to for a little while now, and who's I've been a fan of his comic work since it started coming out last year, I think. This is Dave Abersole. How are you, Dave?
I'm great. How are you? I'm thrilled to be here.
Awesome. And Dave, if you have not heard me talk about it before on this show or our friends over at the Comic Book Bears show, Dave is doing a book with Delia Gable called Dash. And Dash, well, I'll let you pitch it. I'll let you give your pitch about it because I know I've talked about it at least on one or two episodes. So what is Dash about?
Oh, it's going to be so easy if you did it for me.
I like to think of it as like, I mean, gay noir, but I mean, that's too reductive. That's too simplistic. So, I mean, please.
We pitched it as a supernatural noir comic with a openly gay detective in 1940. That was our pitch when Delia and I were tossing it around to publishers. It was kind of like a Maltese Falcon meets The Mummy meets Raiders of the Lost Ark, but just the protagonist is he's openly gay. And it's not like the noir detective kind of like the gay detective is not like a new it's not a new thing, you know. But we really wanted I didn't want to write someone who was angsty in the closet about who he was. I think that story has been done, and I'm not taking anything away from that story, but I just thought it was interesting, like the people who were in that time. That story hasn't really been told because a lot of those people didn't want to be on the record, but they still existed.
Yeah, so. I should have added that extra adjective of out gay detective, because you're right. Like, you see that angst, you see that in the closet, you see that whole thing time and again. But what I love about Dash or Dashiell, who is named after fiction writer Dashiell, and I can't think of his last name.
His name like is Dashiell Hammett.
Dashiell.
And Dashiell, our character is named Dashiell. It's a pretty openly we're nodding and we're also pointing in that direction. it's a pretty obvious homage.
Yeah, which I picked up having been passingly familiar. So I will admit firsthand, I am not a huge noir crime fiction guy. I've read some Parker. I've read I think Maltese Falcon. I mean, I've been exposed to certain work that sort of like Chinatown. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the things that sort of Dash is reminding me of, and I don't know, this might be too geeky even for our show, but I was into PC gaming back in the 90s, and there was a game, I think it was the early 90s, it may have even been late 80s, from Sierra Online called...
Oh my gosh, are you going to say, just say it, just say
Lorabo, The Adventures of Lorabo, or the...
Yes, I my husband's actually more of a fan of it than I am, but... Uh-huh. Yes, I love this. Oh, I can't believe you just said that.
Well, because that had, and it's been a while, please, I may screw this up here, but I know the first one had a vaguely sort of supernatural sort of element.
Yes, it did. I all of the details of it are like
yeah.
They're so far, you know, I was like
the tone and the humor in parts and the if you are an old school gamer, you should go check it out because you will love if you love Dash, you'll love this. And they just have they're kindred spirits, let's say.
That's just so cool that you made that connection.
So Dash. So I don't want to spoil too much for our readers. There have been three issues out.
Yes.
And they're all up on Comixology. This is the thing I have to really get out the word about. And you guys at Northwest, who publishes Dash, our buddy Zan and the whole team, like they're doing a much better job of getting the word out about digital comics. Because I think for the longest time, I know I had a hard time getting those books unless I begged my retailer to order them. But now with the internet and with Comixology and with everything else, there's no reason anybody listening cannot go right now to a device, put in their credit card if it's not already in there, and buy these issues and enjoy them right away. And they look great digitally.
I'm pretty happy with them. And the cool thing, when issue 3 came out, Comixology made us like the banner of their submit page, which is like their indie page. And I had no idea. Like I just thought it was like something on my phone, like, you know, like your phone, like, you know, like it's like what you like or whatever. Right. I just thought it was something like that. And I was like, oh, that's neat that it did that. But no, that was like an official, like we were like, what was it called? It was like their like not premiere, but like
featured
we were
all, comic or something.
Yes, it was like their featured submit comic, which was shocking to me. I was like, what? I was blown away.
And they don't feature Northwest, or they really don't feature a lot of those books often. So I mean, even more so, like that's quite an honor. And I don't know who there does that or whatever. But I mean, have you been privy to digital sales numbers? Like I would think you guys probably do pretty well digitally now. I mean, especially because a lot of stores just don't carry Northwest books yet.
Well, we're doing pretty good on Comixology, and I can't thank like that you're reading anything that I wrote. Just thank you. That's awesome. It's like super, like you have no idea. The thing about we are distributed through Diamond, like, and we are solicited in previews. The problem is that I know a lot of people have gone to do a reorder on 1 and 2 and now 3. And, it says sold out, not available. Because you have to, I think and we're still trying to figure this out, but I think you have to have enough reorders of the one book to be able to submit like a full reorder. I think, I don't know how that works, but like, you know, cause we have plenty of them. Like, it's not like, you know, we have plenty of them. But if you want a hard copy, just go to northwestpress.com. Zan is fantastic about sending things out like with lightning speed. He always finds a way of putting in some cool swag there in the packaging too. So if you want a hard copy and you can't find a hard copy around you, then order directly from them. But you can put us on your pull list. I mean, issue 4 is going to be solicited in September, hopefully, if it all goes well. it's set to be solicited in September, so we're hoping it goes through.
So how involved are you in the production part? Like, do you sort of like in certain like bigger companies, and do you hand it off? Like once you do a script, it's out the door and you don't see it again until it comes back and it's published? Or do you have a more hands-on part in the whole production process? How does that work right now?
Well, I mean, I write the scripts, obviously, and then I hand them to Delia, and then Delia does the and Delia does is the look of the book. She's every reason that if there's any success on this book, it's Delia's. It's all Delia. She is the book. She is the penciler, the inker, the colorist. We do have a flatter who helps her out, but she's also the letterer, which eventually I'll be taking over, but not right now. So she's the look of the book. The look of the book is her, but she'll send me thumbnails of what she does, and then I'll approve them, or I'll say, something like, maybe a different angle or whatever, and then she'll do pencils and then send them to me, and then the inks and colors tend to go. I mean, like, we're constantly going back and forth, and when she's finally done everything, is usually I do another pass at the book, and if something I've written doesn't necessarily match what's on the page, or I can find a better way of saying it, then I will. I have changed every single issue a couple times.
Oh, okay.
Before it goes out the door. I mean, not to hold anything up, but like, I mean, because we have, we try to make our deadlines when we can, but issue four, I'm like, since we're waiting on it to be solicited, like, I'm still making changes on it. I'm actually a little nervous about issue four. We can talk about that later, but.
Well, I realized we didn't even talk about what the story is, other than that he's an out gay detective. So Dash is someone who, from like page one, or fairly quickly into issue one, you find out that he's gay, and you meet his then love interest. I know it's gonna be wrong. What's the love? Pinkle?
His name's Johnny Plinkett.
Plinkett
short.
Yep. So and again, we don't want to spoil the whole thing, but basically, he's not around for very long.
He's not.
It's just heartbreaking because you gave. I think in one issue, we were just talking about Steve Orlando's Midnighter on one of our shows recently, and I was impressed that in one issue, both you and Steve, like, you got gay relationship kind of dynamic, or at least one, but a common relationship dynamic down with minimal amount of storytelling, and like, you just felt like, oh, these two are together and they're really enjoying each other. They're not perfect, there's problems, but like, it was really just well crafted in that you got that out of the way. But I mean, you kind of had to because of what happened, right?
Yeah. Thank you, by the way. And he's doing a fantastic job on Midnighter. He's just doing a fantastic job. And that Virgil's coming out. He wrote Virgil.
I heard of it, but I haven't.
I've read it. It's so good.
Cool.
I don't know. It's funny how characters kind of like, they kind of like, he wasn't supposed to be much, and he ended up being everything, actually. The more we developed him, and that was a collaboration with some feedback I got back on the script, and then with Delia, and when Delia found the look of him, that kind of like that connected something, which is going to come up much later. So I mean, he's dead. Oh shit!
No. I mean, we've kind of alluded to that. So yeah,
spoilers.
Spoilers. His murder, though, really is the sort of hook of that first issue, because you or the twist or whatever. But it certainly is what propelled me back. I mean, like, I want to know why. I want to know how. I want to know what the case is, really. But it's so much more personal because it was Dash's boyfriend, you know?
And that's the thing about a detective, gay, straight, or whatever, that they're not supposed to necessarily, like, one of the tropes of the detective, one of the rules of a detective, actually, what should I say, is that they're not supposed to be in a relationship, just because relationships and feelings cloud the issue. And I'm hoping that we worked so hard in packing like so many things into issue one that further down the line you'll see that like we told you what was going to happen before the issue comes out, and we're really working hard on crafting a story where when you're finished reading you can go back and reread it and see all of the things that we were kind of planning along the way, hopefully without it being too obvious. Hopefully.
I mean, three issues in, I don't know what's going on, really. I mean, especially because in that first issue and the second issue, I think only by the end of the second issue did you basically realize that there was something supernatural involved? Like, it wasn't just a straight up case of, of murder. I mean, there was certainly more to it. And I mean, a lot of the tropes are there, of course, from classic noir. I mean, you have the secretary, the spunky secretary, playing a big role, which she's amazing. I mean, just her voice too is one of those characters that I've had good female friends who had that personality. And so whenever I read it, like, I'm totally hearing that, you know, as a voice. You've got, and this actually kind of surprised me too. And again, I'm not trying to spoil all the stuff, but like cops, both good and bad, both homophobic and, totally cool with whatever. Like, I think it was the second issue where you spend time at like the precinct, and that did not unfurl the way I would have expected from just a normal, like, you know, any other story. It took beats that I was like, oh, well, all right, cool. this is different. in a good way that, like, again, I think what I'm trying to say is it surprises. And I've heard this from a few other people who've read it. It surprises you. It doesn't take the obvious beats, and you really don't know where it's going to go next.
Well, I'm a really big fan of a book with a good supporting cast. I come from theater, and I used to act a lot, and I was always the supporting character, so I understand that role. and especially his secretary and his policeman friend. They're very much influenced by two really, really good friends of mine. It's not literal autobiographical in any way, but like they're inspired by them. So I'm so happy that they're getting like the feedback on those characters are getting, it's coming back really well. It thrills me.
Now, I know with issue 4, you're at least in the coming soon or the next time or whatever, you're promising some answers. At least a character is promising some answers. So what kind of arc do you have for this story? Is it a fixed number of issues? Are you doing like a 6 or 5 issue arc? Like, what's your plan for this right now?
We're doing a 6-issue arc. I have this mapped out to about 42, maybe 45 issues, and then it's end. There's an end. We're like, I'm working toward an end. There is an end. There's six issue arcs, and then a bunch of one shots, single individual cases, if you will. Mm-hmm. And some of them will be slightly supernatural, and some of them will be straight up mystery, like crime fiction, you know, like down to earth. It's a tightrope we're walking, and I really want to keep on walking the tightrope and kind of like give people who are fans of all of the kind of genres like something to come back to come to the book for, you know, and I'm hoping they'll mesh well because I love both the kind of genres and I love reading both. I love when they mesh well, so I'm hoping we're doing a good okay with job with that. Issue 4 though, it kind of sets up the world that going forward, like, and what the world's capable of. And like I said before, Dash is it's Maltese Falcon meets the Mummy meets Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we're really gonna kind of get to that Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of thing with issue 4, and hopefully it doesn't go too far off the rails for anybody.
Well, it's funny you say Raiders, because actually, now that I think about it, I mean, okay, so he's not wearing the Harrison Ford outfit from Raiders, but looking at it, actually, again, I see the hat or the fedora, which, again, is totally not just a Raiders thing, but I can kind of see him putting on like a leather or, you know, that rugged sort of explorer outfit.
He's not digging for any – he's not going to go where Indy goes in a lot of – like, he is a detective, and Indy's an archaeologist, whatever.
But he's got that rugged adventure with the gun. And I mean, if he pulled out a whip, I wouldn't be surprised. That's all I'm saying. I mean, maybe he had it for other reasons. I don't know, but I'm just, you know.
He had it for other reasons.
And the other thing is, I mean, it's in the 40s. You could certainly bring in Nazis somehow. I mean, you know, that's certainly, especially with the occult, if there is more of an occult part of it, you know, you could even go sort of a Hellboy sort of, you know, direction and involve Nazis. So, you know, I'm just saying, you got options.
Hey, Brian, keep reading. And there are big reasons that we said in 1940.
So apart from Dash and your comic stuff that you're doing with Northwest, you also have an extensive theater background from what I've read. I've never seen one of your productions. Maybe someday I'll be fortunate enough. But what I have noticed about what I've seen you post, and again, I've just seen promo, you know, nothing really too in-depth. But you definitely have, I mean, you know, there's some obvious, like, you know, gay lesbian themes, you know, which you know, okay, that's not shocking in theater, or especially from a gay screenwriter or, you know, playwriter. But you also seem to have, like, superhero themes and other I don't want to say S&M because I don't know if really that's what you're going for.
I know what play you're talking about.
Well, so Redemption has the guy with, you know, the hands bound behind his back. But
yeah,
I think I even saw something else that struck me. But you've also done, like, Fringe productions. So, like, you know, you have a wide palette of theater for you to paint on. What kind of plays or what kind of stories do you like to tell in that space, in that medium?
I didn't start writing plays until I was, like, in my early 30s. I didn't start writing until my early 30s because it was something I was, like, I didn't think I was very good at. I was very into directing. And the more I was directing, and, like, the whole new play thing was, like, you know, there was kind of not so much anymore. In fact, like, it's wildly different now than it was, I would say, even 5 years ago. But there was kind of a stigma with, like, new plays or, you know, new plays. So, you know, it's a new playwright. Okay, all right, whatever. When I kind of got over that, I kind of was like, all right, well, I hope I don't suck. And here we go. And I had one or two really fantastic friends who gave me who helped me find the confidence in myself to do it. And I just started putting myself out there, and people liked it. Like, since I started writing comics, my plays have kind of taken a turn toward, you know, they're now guns in my shows sometimes. But before that, my first few plays were, I don't want to say autobiographical, but they were based on a lot of stuff I knew, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So, and specifically, like, I'm looking at the church bells all were broken.
Yeah, which I'm hoping to revive next Philadelphia Fringe Festival. Not this one, but the next one.
Oh, sweet. And just to put it out there, we have a very nice Fringe Festival here in Orlando. I have been told people tell me that it's really well regarded and da da da. But I have been increasingly going to the Fringe productions down here, and they are excellent, pretty much almost as a rule. But be that as it may, I'm just saying, if you ever want to put your plays out down in, you know, Florida, just, you know, talk to me. We got people. We can figure something out. I will. No, I mean, I think especially. Oh, so I want to start with the religious stuff, and then I want to get to Living Space because that also has something that catches my eye. But so it looks like religion plays a role in some of your early work and reaction to religion and religious iconography, religious themes.
It's going to start playing up. It's going to start playing a role in Dash soon too.
Ooh, that's like my catnip. And I forgot where this was. I think it was on Facebook. It may have been on Twitter. I don't remember. But there was a comment made that you came from a religious schooling background.
Yes, I spent 10 and a half years of my life at not a Catholic school, a Christian school.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is Catholic school has a lot of guilt, you know. Personally, I don't know. Christian school has, like, has like guilt like internally, or so it just it plans weird. Like I have like I'm still like even like I think like this week I was like, wait a minute, that I have this hang up because of X, Y, and Z, and then I don't want to blame like, you know, like, and then I went to public school and that there was a whole other minefield that was like, you know, I just going from a very tiny private school to a very large public school was like it was monumental for me, like to the point where I almost like I almost took my life because it was a massive change, and there was just going through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even come out yet to that at that point. I didn't even come out until my early 20s. So it was like, so there's that whole aspect of it too.
Right.
But yeah, I still believe in God. And I think there's a lot of stuff we don't know. And I think, as a liberal person saying that, I feel like I'm stepping out on a limb here too. Because I know, you know, being liberal and having faith is they don't always go hand in hand.
Well, like, so just to give you a sort of a touching point here, I also went to a Christian school, not a Catholic school. I actually went for my entirety of my high school and under pre-K to 12, basically the whole thing.
Oh, you went for I went K through middle of time period. So
okay, okay. It was
your school.
Let's see. My graduating class had about, let's say, 60 people in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, there were a lot, all the grades were there. So, I mean, when you got an assembly together with everybody, it was a big group. But yeah, in my immediate sphere, it was fairly small. However, I was also I'm a musician. I was in the band. So that grew that sphere a little bit too.
What did you play?
I'm primarily a sax player. I also play keyboards and electronic instruments, and I'm trying to learn this and that instrument. Like I'm a dabbler. I play regularly, like sax and different wind ensembles, bands, whatever. But like I love music. You know, I'm a musician. I do anything I can to stay involved, not being a full time or even I would say if I'm part time, I'm like 3 weekends a year kind of part time, you know? But I have been paid, so I can consider myself professional.
There you go.
But no, so being in a Christian school and a lot of people who don't have that background, they don't realize the actual like fact is the schools tend to be pretty good academically, with a few exceptions, of course.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Like they're a lot of the reasons that they one of the reasons I was sent there was because it was a great prep school for college.
Yes,
you know, that was a good pedigree or whatever. I don't think I don't want to say that. My parents never use that word. On top of that, it can get a little weird.
Let's start here. Did you have uniforms?
We did not.
Oh, okay.
We did not have uniforms. And I counted once, because I still have them. They're like a trophy. I got like, I think I had like 40 some detentions.
Oh, because wow.
You could not wear blue jeans, but you could wear black jeans. But you had to tuck your shirt in. And I was, you know, it was like, you know, the early 90s where like grunge was like the rage. And so I always had like a flannel t-shirt or something like, and I would never tuck it in. And I would always get a detention. They'd give you a detention after a detention for it. So I still have them as like, you know, like,
what did they look like when you say you have them? What shape or what did they have a name for them or
they're detention slips. It was like okay. A carbon copy. There was a white form on the top and then there was like a yellow, a pink form.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, so like what, like, and I think there was a yellow form. I don't know. They went to different departments and then I got, and you had to go home and have the parents sign them. And it was, yeah.
So our detentions were called tallies. I don't know why. You know, like you're tallying up a score or something. And they were actually yellow cards. And what was amazing about them, and I still have one somewhere, they fully like fleshed out what you did. And there was a rating system. And you had to sign it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you could only have 5 a day. If you went past 5, I think you got like suspended or something. I probably got a handful in my life. I was, even though in my Bible classes, which we always had a Bible class every semester, every whatever. Yeah. Even
did
though
start, did yours start the day? Ours in the high school, at least, ours started the day.
No, it varied because we had different schedules and all that. But it was funny because in Christian schools, a lot of times the teachers don't have to be as well certified to teach a subject. And so you'll see, depending on the school, of course, but you'll see coaches teach Bible class. You'll see various people who probably don't have like a really strong religious back, like, you know, formal training background teaching religion.
They don't have a theological background at all.
Right. If they went to seminary, and some do, so of course, but a lot of them don't. So I was like in high school, one of the ones who would challenge the presented lessons if they dealt with things like evolution or homosexuality or women's rights, which that didn't come up too often. But yeah, but I mean, like, I really enjoyed most of that because I felt the teachers usually were a little like interested in having a discussion, partly because if they didn't do that, the class would not interact with them whatsoever. Like, you know, they just were not getting a response from the material because it's the Bible, and the Bible can sometimes be, if presented the wrong way, a little dry, you know, especially the New Testament, which is, of course, where a lot of it's focused on. But one Bible class I actually had to write. This was the guy is doing this. His name was Mr. Bland. I kid you not.
That's amazing.
Yep. And he had us write in its entirety, I think for a whole semester, the book of Proverbs. Okay. Proverbs is an amazing book. Like, there's some really funny, like, you know, I haven't studied the Hebrew, but like, you know, the English translations are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially like King James, you know, King James translation, as inaccurate as it is in a lot of ways, it's the one everybody knows, you know? But yeah, we had to rewrite out. It's like we were the scribes of the Middle Ages.
Wait, the whole book? You had to write
the whole book of Proverbs. Yep.
Like handwriting?
Handwritten. Yep. I, to this day, wonder, like, what was going through his head? Is it like, he felt like he needed to have us do something and he didn't want to get in front. Partly, I know, because we had a tough crowd.
Wait, did you do that in class?
No, he had us do it. Every student sat in his class quietly and wrote the book of Proverbs.
So did you actually have a class? Or yeah. Did it just sound like you didn't know what to do?
It was like a study hall with like a forced assignment. And I think it's partly because he just didn't know what to do and kept us quiet. It really kept us. Well, okay, in theory, it kept us quiet. When actuality, a lot of us would get hall passes, which he would gladly give, and we would go off and do God knows what. I mean, you know, I can't say we were doing anything really salacious, at least not me. Usually would walk down to the band room and see what was going on. But, you know, the point was, like, he just didn't want to be there. He didn't want to do it. It was a remarkable experience. But – but you know, did you have any teachers in your Christian school that you either thought were horrendous or like actually surprisingly good?
Well, yes, both ends. But we had a guy in our middle school. He taught Latin, and we had to take 2 years of Latin. And he dressed like the guy from the Brady Bunch, the father. Bell bottoms, a crazy mustache.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I found out like later he got like fired for like, you know, like harassing like girls or like trying to like do stuff with the girls.
Oh no.
He like looked like a guy who would do that. But you're like, well, you know, whatever. I mean, I guess if 1992 you're wearing bell bottoms, you know, I don't know. But, that was a little weird. I was just talking about this with my buddy online that I think I made a Facebook post about this. Like, I could not I was thinking about it. The in our Bible class, the teacher, he wheeled in this VCR on TV, and he had recorded some the interview with President Clinton the night before. And in the interview, the whoever was like ABC or whatever asked him your beliefs in God, and you know, Clinton went off, and, you know, I believe in Jesus Christ, blah blah blah, and my faith, all this stuff, and so at the end of it, he turns it off, and the teacher's like, you know what, I just don't believe him, and I'm like, and that was it, and then it went into like whatever, but like I'm like, who does that? Like, how do you, like, how do you, like, how do you even, that doesn't, what? And that was, like, and it was just something, like, it was a day, and I just kind of, like, tuned it out, but it was, like, something that, like, kind of, like, stuck in my head, you know what I mean?
Oh.
And it was, like, and it was just, like, but I was, like, oh, what are you training, young conservatives here? Is that what you're, is that what, was that the point of that? Like, I didn't even know, like, I still to this day, like, think, like, that's crazy, like, how do you doubt, like, somebody else's faith? Isn't that against the law? Like, I don't know.
Oh, are you kidding me? Like, growing up in – so my school was predominantly Southern Baptist, but Protestant, you know, overall. There may have even been a few Catholics. I hope not for their sake, because we were routinely told that the Catholic Church was wrong, that they weren't really Christians in the best sense. Like, there was this whole thing where they were like second class Christians, and they worshiped Mary, and they had all these terrible things that they did. And like, I sense like I've fallen in love with the Catholic Church because
really.
Oh, very. I'm not a practicing. I mean, I don't go to church regularly, like I used to, but like, I've played and I've been a part of Catholic masses for weddings and for, you know, whatever reason. Like, I've been to services, and the pageantry and the music and the tradition and the history, like, it's just so cool to sort of see that and to study. As a music major, I studied the mass as a musical form. Like, there was so much music written and music grew so much from the church that you have to study it, you know? So like, I've completely looked back on that and just shaken my head at how dare you be so judgmental. But, you know, honestly, there was judgment going everywhere. I mean, they were judging gays and lesbians. They were judging women doing things they didn't think they should. Like, you know, you look back, and even though academically, yeah, it was pretty good, there was just so much of that that we're like, how do we get out of it and turn out like, well, like, liberal, like, progressive? Like, I wonder that myself.
I don't know. I don't know what you had in terms of sex ed, but we had, in especially in middle school, we had a quote unquote adolescence class, and our book was written by one James Dobson.
Oh, I think we had that book
called Preparing for Adolescence.
I really think we had that book.
Oh yeah, I just recently looked at the reviews of it online. That's all I'm gonna say.
So our homework for the listeners to go check it out. So, sex ed, I don't even remember if we had any sex ed formal. I do remember that book, but I also, I actually remember some of those old from the 50s, sex education sort of. They didn't play the Beware the Homosexual, or they didn't play that one. I saw that one either.
I feel like robbed.
Well, oh, I do too, except, you know, I saw it years later and just freaking loved it. But what they did play when I was not – so I had a pretty good track record attendance-wise. I called out. I was sick or called in sick maybe once or twice in a year or two. So I didn't get a lot of, you know, whatevers. But like, the one day, or maybe it was 2 days that I was out, I think it was my junior year, they had a video, and it was somebody doing a hidden camera – at Gay Days in Orlando, where, you know, Disney World's Gay Days. And this was back when Gay Days, I think, was fairly new, because this was like the 90s as well. And it had salacious, you know, pictures and video of drag queens and transsexuals. Not that that's salacious, but like, the way they edited it and the way they portrayed it.
It was horrifying.
It was like they were having orgies in the theme parks. And having been to Gay Days now for years, the most excitement I ever saw was like a friend of mine flashing another friend of mine on like the Haunted Mansion, like a ride that is so dark that it's like, and it's stupid. Like, it's just, but that was, so they kept the homosexuality topic completely out of the rest of the year, but brought it up 2 days I was out. And I found out about this later. Now, I was not out, of course. In high school, no, of course not. But I made it very clear that I did not agree with the the way they were portraying the Bible. You know, I even got so far as into like, well, in the Old Testament, you're under the Old Covenant. In the New Testament, you know, Jesus actually never says anything about homosexuality. It's only Paul who talks about it. And if you look at the Greek, it's not homosexuality the way we know it. It's pedantry. It's – or not pedantry. It's pederasty. It's temple prostitute. You know, all the stuff that you read about and you think about and you study, and people have gone, yeah, Paul probably wasn't talking about what we think of today, you know. But we got into all of that.
You brought up my play Church Bells, the Church Bells All Were Broken, and it's I get into all of that in there. I can't even homosexuality at my Christian school, like, unheard of. Like, I don't even remember. I remember it being discussed as like vaguely as like just like, you know what I mean, like who would ever be that? And it was just, it was just, and meanwhile, like, you know, me and my friends are like reading like these like crazy Image comics at the back of the classroom.
Nice.
I have this crazy story about this this friend of mine, and he was like super into Jim Lee X-Men, and like, and I did art all through high school. I my first year of college was graphic design. Like, I just don't have the patience to just do it as a comic panel. But, and we were jamming on this like massive, like X-Men, like poster. And we were drawing just like Jim Lee and everybody just like Jim Lee, and his mother came in and flipped out, like, you are objectifying the women, blah, 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 you know, this is everything that's wrong with this, you know, like on and on, ripped the poster in half, called my mother, saying we have to do something about this comic book thing with these young men, they're objectifying women. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea. I'm like, that's how Jim Lee drew the ladies, like, you know. Like, I had no idea, you know. I was more interested in Wolverine subconsciously, like, I had no idea. Like, and so like we went this whole, like, it got into this whole thing about it just felt like in that environment, sex was just so, like, it was so taboo, like, so taboo, that you just didn't talk about it. It was talked about, but it was just like, ugh.
Yeah, and it's so funny because they've shown so many times over that in the absence of like good sex education, like, people, kids still learn about it. They find out, especially we found out probably a lot of it. I mean, I know I did, through the internet. And this was back when the internet was like bulletin boards, Prodigy, and AOL. And there was still chat rooms. There was still news groups. There were still places to get your porn, to get your dirty stories. That was a big thing for me back then.
There was the Spice Channel on Channel 95. You look through the bars.
Exactly. I find it, you know, and I have kept up only somewhat with my school, you know, since then, as far as like how things have changed. And from what little I've been told, like, it's changed, but not as much as you'd hope. And a lot of these things we're complaining about are still pretty much the case.
Yeah. And so I ended up leaving because, For two reasons, and one had to do with the other, that in my 10th grade year, they made everyone sign a pledge that among all, like, they would live a Christian lifestyle, and among all of those things, that you would never be caught smoking. If you were caught smoking, you could be expelled. If you were caught having sex outside of the school, you could be expelled. And we're not talking about on school property, we're talking about off of school grounds in the privacy of your own home. And I did not agree with that. I thought, I'm like, you can't control everyone's lives, you know, like that. So I got down to it. I was the only one in the entire school that had not signed it.
Wow.
And I was constantly being drugged down. And they drugged down to the assistant principal's office. And the assistant principal said to me, okay, you know, I respect your stand on this, but you know you will not be allowed to come back here next year. If you don't sign this paper. And concurrently, like, my family was going through a whole bunch of kind of crisis, and they just decided that it was for the best that they because of that, since I wasn't going to sign, that to pull me out, just, you know, for, you know, save money, and there you go. So I ended up going into this, like, you know, it would go, my class was like 90 something into a high school of like, my graduating class was like, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000, something like that.
Wow. What a culture shock.
It was a massive culture shock, dude. It was like so crazy.
So we had that same pledge that we had to sign. And I admire that you had you were brave enough at that age to stand up and say, hell no, because I didn't. I was so in fear of, you know, repercussions, and that was my only world. Like, I just didn't even conceive of anything outside of it, that as far as school goes. I mean, I always kind of wanted to go to a public school because they had like honors stuff, which we had a little bit, but then they had like IB International Baccalaureate. Like, it looked to me like they had other cool stuff. Plus their marching bands were huge and ours was like tiny. But having said all that, I signed the pledge, and, you know, honestly, I led a pretty pilgrim like existence until my college era. So, you know, it worked out okay. But what's funny is they made the teachers sign the same thing. And we had a teacher.
Really?
We had a teacher. Okay, this is fucked up. And he was an amazing math teacher by the name of Mr. Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And he was caught coming out of the adult section of a. It was either a Blockbuster or something equivalent back in that era. There were other video chains, you know, because I don't know if Blockbuster had it. Anyway.
I don't know.
And some might have. But yeah, long story short, it came out of one of those, a parent or a student, and then told their parent, saw him do that, and they fired him.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was like one of the best algebra teachers. Like, in that school, he was the only algebra teacher. But since then, like, I've been an educator myself, and I studied math for a little bit. Like, I absolutely think he was an excellent teacher.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And just got railroaded out because of something so like, people think teachers now have it bad and they're under such a microscope because of this and that. And it's true. But, man, you have no idea what it's like until you teach at one of those schools.
We had a Bible teacher that he was like the whole Robin Williams Dead Poets Society thing. Like, he was like teaching us to, like, you know, stand up for what you know, but like just that he was teaching us that we're not learning the Bible correctly. And he was really challenging people's beliefs, and like, we loved him, and his name is Mr. Davey, and they fired him. Well, he was I'm still a mystery. You know, I was a freshman. It was my Bible class, my first semester freshman year. And in the middle of the year, they let him go. It was one of those moments where you're like, what? You know, that he was telling us the truth.
And they shut him down. Oh, it's totally that.
Yeah, it was. And this stuff sticks with you. You know, like, so I told you I went to public school. And so all of my friends from my private school, going back to the sex ed thing for a little bit, for a second, the idea that any of us would masturbate was terrible. Like even, and we were like pretty, like, you know, we were like, you know, we punk rock, like rock and roll, but like, you know, that's disgusting. We don't do that, you know, like, and I've literally watched porn with these people. Like, you know, I don't do that. Go to public school. And I made friends there. Like, my guy friends would talk about it constantly.
Right.
Constantly. And it was like, it was such, and for me, it was such a culture shock. It was like, why would you ever admit that? Like, why would you ever, you know? And then they were like, everybody does it. And I realized, yeah, everyone, what? And that's like, and that's just kind of like this subtle programming that you get in your head that you don't realize that it's there. Like, I feel like Catholic school, you can see it. It's obvious. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Christian school, it's a little more, it's way more subversive.
You almost get sort of a taste of what people get in like the Soviet Union or totalitarian states where there's like censorship and thought speech, like, you know, 1984, you know, you can't use certain words, and by not being able to use certain words and think certain thoughts or express certain thoughts, it sort of shapes the way you think into this sort of, we are another part of your machine, or we are at least part of your controlled community, and we won't go outside the lines. Like, you know, it really does have an effect on you.
Right. And the great thing about it was, like, I had, like, in that school, like, on the flip side is I had an amazing art teacher who was like, who always seemed to find a way to fight whatever, like, administrative kind of way, and an amazing drama teacher at the same time. Although they did Into the Woods, and when I saw Into the Woods later, I didn't realize that in the middle of the second act, the giant doesn't break out and tell the audience, you know, all of this is happening because Jesus said, you know, because and I didn't realize that was not like a thing. Like, I thought that happened in that play. It doesn't happen in that play. It doesn't happen.
God.
They don't turn to the audience and deliver a monologue about Jesus. That doesn't happen.
See, my school, when they did drama, at least they just stuck to things that weren't controversial, like, you know, Brigadoon and Pirates of Penzance, and even though that one's got a little bit, you know, Oklahoma. Like, they took the safest possible route. And since then, I've seen what they're doing is pretty much straight up all Disney, like Disney Broadway stuff they'll adapt. So, like, they didn't even have to walk that line. But, oh my God, that they would take a Sondheim play and deface it with that nonsense?
I mean, I can only assume, because the drama teacher was so awesome, that was her subversive way of slipping Sondheim. and that was like a compromise she had to make.
True.
I don't know if it was a good compromise, or, you know, you can judge all you want, but she was good people. So,
well, so my music teachers and my band teacher, my choir teacher, and my English teachers, actually, two of them anyway, were, I think, in the same boat where they were not as dogmatic. They didn't agree with the thought policing or whatever, but they were in positions to sort of slip things by.
Senior English class,
my teacher, Debbie Carroll, she had us do like summer reading, and it was from a list of books that were, I'm sure, approved and blessed, but I bet they weren't really heavily vetted, because I read Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man.
Wow.
Now, it's not James Joyce's most it's certainly not his love letters to his wife, which, if you have not experienced, you need to go check those out. They are some of the dirtiest things, some of the funniest things I've ever read. But Portrait of an Artist has got some sexual content, and it's not even like sort of like candy coated. I mean, it's pretty explicit, albeit brief. And so, like, you know, getting us to read stuff like that. There were some other books we read that weren't as out there. But still, like, to this day, I think back and go, God, I'm so blessed in that environment to have those outlets, to have those, like you had with drama and art. Like, you know, you just find those ways to, even if you're in this total thought police, whatever, to express yourself and to be exposed to some good stuff, you know?
It's not something I would ever recommend anybody going through, honestly. Like, I hate to say that, you know, because I made, like, two of my best friends. I still, you know, they were both in my wedding, my best man. I don't even know what to say.
I was going to say, have you ever – oh, so this is the only thing – well, this is one of the things I think I take away from it. Have you ever gotten into a religious conversation with someone who's like very conservative, and they don't expect you to know the Bible as well as you do? And so suddenly you're in this conversation and you're quoting scripture at them, and they're just like – their mouth is on the ground. Have you ever had that?
A little bit. Only a little bit.
I love that.
Because, because the people I have like know, like kind of knew going into the conversation about my background. A little bit. And it's surprising to me actually too when I have these debates have come up how uneducated they are on scripture.
Oh yeah.
And then that's also surprising. You know, I've gotten into more, believe it or not, I've gotten into more arguments with atheists about it. And I'm never seeking these arguments out. I'm not the guy who's like, oh, you don't believe in God? Well, let me talk about it. Like, I'm not like, hey, you know, whatever you want to believe in, that's fantastic with me. And we can agree to disagree, and I can learn from you, and you can learn from me. But a few of the people I've met and who I've encountered and worked with have tried to really have this debate with me, and I'm like, I really don't want to have this debate with you. You know, I want us to exist together. You know?
Yeah, no, and I work in a software group, and a lot. I would dare say 90% of my office is actually it's shifted a little bit, but still the majority are atheists and sometimes a little militant. And again, it's the same thing. It's like, well, that's cool. I'm not going to argue with your, you know, faith in no whatever. I have no reason to try to talk you out of that. If that's not real to you, then that's not real to you. And I'm sort of a type of Christian where I'm like, I think you'll be fine. I think, you know, I'm not the doom and gloom. You're all going to hell. So, you know, brimstone. Like, that's not what I'm coming from now. It's not where I'm at. So you're not going to get that from me, but I also have to stand there and say, but, you know, you misjudge some of the motivation, you know, some younger Christians and people who are more dogmatic. I think they do come from a place of, no, you're going to go to hell if you don't get right. Like, they aren't doing it necessarily at first as a way to be oppressive. What happens is they get that zeal, that fervency of conviction that then makes them come across like complete assholes. And you lose the message. You know, I had this conversation with my mom the other night because we get into a lot. And I said, you know, she loves like, you know, Ben Carson and And like, and you know, and, but she's criticizing these things, and she's all concerned with my family's, like my brother is atheist and all that. And I said, Mom, are you surprised? I mean, the environment that we grew up in was so oppressively heavy handed in its Christianity that, yeah, I'm not shocked that there's a reaction to it, that, you know, the people who've come through that don't have a super positive image of Christianity because they see the really vocal assholes out there now. And they don't want to have any part in that church. And you have to dig really hard to get to like the Tony Campalos or the Red Letter Christians, you know, Patheos. There's a couple sites that I go to for this kind of stuff. But it's basically left-leaning Christians.
Right.
And have any sense of like, oh, this is what somebody who really has a good understanding of the Gospels actually should sound like. Should be like a life positive, help the poor, feed the poor, help those who need it. You know, let's be a better human race. It's not drive out the Sadducees and Pharisees. Like, I mean, admittedly, Jesus did that, but, you know, only when they really pissed him off.
I've not seen a whole lot of people like giving up all of their riches and going to follow God. I'm not seeing a lot of that.
Exactly. Yeah, they pick and choose. They accuse us of picking and choosing what we believe from the Bible, and it's like, honey, are you kidding me?
You know, a lot of people have said how can I have faith and have a husband, you know. And I can say that I struggled with who I am and what I believe for a very, very long time until one day I just said, yeah, God, take it away from me, you know, or do something with it. And a week later, I was in a relationship that I ended up getting married to 14 wow. years.
That's awesome.
And I that's quote unquote my testimony. And when I tell that to people who are concerned with my quote unquote lifestyle because of God, they don't tend to have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, I say, you know, that's my testimony. And you can't tell me that you have faith in God and can't see God in that story.
Yeah.
Because I've heard many stories where, you know, similar outcomes, yet it's not a homosexual relationship. But,
oh, yeah. You know,
it's not a gay relationship. So, and honestly, I think, you know, my relationship, where I am with my relationship is usually a barometer where I am spiritually. You know, if I'm really, really far apart from God, and my marriage is probably in trouble. And it's worked, that's kind of where I stand on the whole thing.
That's awesome. I mean, I love hearing that because it mirrors what I believe. It may not mirror exactly my experience, but only in the sense that I was in a 14-year relationship till about 2.5 years ago. But like it did feel like when people would challenge me about gay marriage or gay adoption, I would really come back with what is it that you disagree with in terms of people loving each other and forming families and taking care of each other? Like, I don't see any contradiction except maybe in a very narrow view of the Old Testament. And I don't think I think Christians largely agree that that's the Old Covenant. So it's not, you know, we don't have prohibitions against eating the split-hoofed animals and shellfish. So why are you having this hold up on gays, you know, and a man lying with a man, you know, and then they pull out Paul and all that. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like it's, they're always reaching for it.
I just don't like Paul.
Well, that's kind of the red letter Christian sort of view is the New Testament's great. And no red letter Christian, I think, throws that out. But like, you know, you get to inerrancy of the word and you get to, you know, this, that, and the other. And I think red letters, like we take the gospels and hold them up and say the gospels are what we absolutely think are the highlights of the New Testament. Everything else is either Paul or other writers. And if you study theology, you know, writers possibly not even the people who they say they are, but writing in the name of that apostle, like they are to be taken as stories, as sort of, they're trying to work out their beliefs, you know, in the different churches and all that. But like, just because they disagree with each other. If you go to different books, they don't agree. Paul doesn't agree with himself sometimes.
Right. So this is why people, a lot of people kind of lose the faith, or any faith. This is kind of where I'm at right now. I feel like there is, you know, some books missing, and the Catholic Bible has books that I wasn't raised with, you know, and things like that. And I don't know what the answer is there, but I know apparently, you know, the Word of God doesn't stop, and I feel like it's still being written. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, no, I trust me, I'm a big Apocrypha nut.
Okay.
I've read Elaine Pagel's book on the Gnostic Gospels.
Okay.
And oh my God, like there's so much in if you study the church and the rise of the Catholic Church and then, you know, splitting off into whatever. Like there's so much there politically and they're like consolidating power and by kicking out the Gnostics altogether, they made a choice that I feel like collapse down our possibilities to this one small little option when there were so many more.
Right. And it's kind of daring. And I've been having this conversation with some of my friends and they're, you know, no one, you don't really know. And that's where like the whole faith thing comes in, you know, it's scary. If I hadn't felt things move through me and I felt things move through me, that's like Burger King moves through me too. So that's a terrible, terrible phrasing right there, Dave. But you know what I mean? Like I've seen a higher power in my life, both in my personal life, my professional life, artistically. And so I'm there with that. There you go.
Well, I'm really glad we got into this because it is certainly interesting to find someone with a similar background, but also to sort of explore how your faith influences your work. And like you said, you know, it touches on the plays you've written. It touches on a Dash to some extent, at least, you know, some of the church. And I love writers that have that kind of, like, you see some of their things coming through in their work, you know, and then you dig a little deeper and you find out that their life, you know, took them in this and that direction. And you see that played out. So like, I love realizing those connections, you know?
And what's crazy is Delia self-identifies as a pagan, and she said like some of the stuff she's like you take, and she comes from Catholic schools too, and she's like, you take, and you know where we're going, and she's like, you know, she's like she said as a pagan, I appreciate with what you did with that. She's like, I really you know, and so I'm trying, it's that's all I can say.
Well, I don't want to, yeah, don't spoil anything that hasn't come out yet, certainly.
But yeah.
Well, so what other projects do you have coming up? I mean, so I did want to get back to the play you did. And I shut the tab. The lightsaber on the table. What's that play about?
that play's called Living Space. I just finished it. I just did a weekend long workshop of it, four performances. It's probably my most personal play. It was a play I was running away from for a very long time. We did a stage reading of it like 4 years ago and a bunch of like private readings of it. And so we basically, what a workshop is, it was basically everything but like the final product. You know, it had costumes, it had, you know, fighting, you know, it's just not everything was completely off book. You know, not the set wasn't completely there. It was just kind of an audience, like a way, and then the audience would feedback at the end of it. And I was in it. And it was about a gay man who just wants a straight friend. and that may sound like and I was worried that would sound like a little self-hating, but it was kind of where I was at one point. And it's about a guy who finds this guy passed out in his friend's car and takes him home. And he ends up moving in, and they and about their friendship and this gay straight friendship, and it's in a way it's very much it's based around a friendship that I had developed, and is one of my best friends to this day.
Oh, that's really cool. I mean, I wasn't sure how prominently the lightsaber plays in, but I think looking at that.
Oh, there's a lightsaber fight. There's a drunken lightsaber
fight. Oh, that's awesome.
And there's a drunken lightsaber fight, and he gets in his underwear to do it. So
that's
there's something for everyone in that.
But I also see now why choosing that, like if you didn't have the lightsaber, it would look like two guys and two probably gay guys, like, you know, boyfriends or something and just hanging out. But by putting the lightsaber, you at least suggest that, oh, wait, maybe this is more than that. Not that, like, obviously gays can't be geeks because that's what we are. But like, you know, it puts that extra idea out there into that picture. So.
Yeah, and I think then Star Wars is a real fun point where a lot of people can congeal around. I just hope I don't get sued. To have that in a play. So we'll see. It got such a fantastic response. And at the end of this, it was 2 weekends ago, my buddy who did it with me, who helped me write the play, he ended up proposing to his now fiance on stage. And it was there's nothing like getting on stage in front of a bunch of people and kind of expressing your love for each other. And I don't know, it's just, it was such an awesome experience.
That's really cool.
And hopefully it will be done soon. I had two directors approach me after it who were interested in it. So I'm hoping it goes off and has a life of its own, that I'm excited for.
That's really cool. That's awesome. I am becoming – so I never was big into theater, but I'm certainly growing into that appreciation. And having friends now that work at the Fringe or do the Fringe productions, having friends who work – and actually one friend that like runs a major like community center or theater center kind of thing. Like you're – like I'm seeing that like behind the scenes kind of perspective, and it's just so cool to see like projects come together like that.
And honestly, doing theater helped me immensely become – a comic book writer and how to give direction in my scripts and how to collaborate with an artist, had I not started writing comics when I did, I probably would have been very, very lost or very, very uncollaborative, or very, very closed off. And because I have had years of, you know, working with people to make something, you know, writing comics and working with an artist and working with a teammate, it came in second nature.
Wow, that's cool. Those relationships don't necessarily seem like they would follow, but I mean, I can see how the more I don't even know. Like, so was it the direction angle that you really felt like helped you develop that authorship?
Yeah, I was. Because I've mostly done. I mean, I've had like 10 years of directing, only 5 years of playwriting, and so and now like I guess like 2 years of comic writing. But it was you know, because the artist is the actor,
right?
The artist is the one performing. You know, that's the work you're seeing. That's the work you see first, and then you see all the other subtle nuances and stuff like that. But they're the real stars, you know. And I know, like in comics, like, you know, there's this whole like, you know, who's more important, the artist or the writer? And it's constantly going back and forth, and it's both.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a visual medium, so you know, it, like the artist is the person who's going to get you to grab the book off the shelf.
Yep. No, I mean it's a back and forth, like you said, and the, you can go back and go through the eras of artist centric, writer centric, artist, but it's a collaboration, and just like theater is a collaboration, and like you said, you know, you just don't appreciate maybe some of it at first. I mean, I when I first read comics, I didn't know who the hell was Stan Lee was. Well, I knew probably who Stan Lee was, but I didn't know Jack Kirby. I didn't know, heck, even Jim Lee and Wills Portacio and Chris Claremont, like they were on the books. But I didn't know who like they were, and I didn't get the relationship. And you know, you have to sort of immerse yourself over time and start to pick apart those roles. I mean, to this day, even though I've been involved in making comics, like there's still roles like the editor that from one project to another can be drastically different, you know?
Depending on the company and depending on why they're there, you know.
Yeah. So.
I had the best training on it was that when I developed Dash, I worked at Sarah. I got to workshop it at Sarah Lawrence with Scott Snyder.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, that was, and I mean, I had like some awesome people in my class, like Matt Miner, who's doing Liberator, Amy Chu, who's about to do the Poison Ivy book, like, and some other like really, really super talented people who were about to come up in comics. That like it was, you know, it was a class, and. And it culminated in us being at the DC offices, and it was so amazing. And that's when I was like, I want to do this. Like, I'm going to make this happen. And that's when Delia and I got in contact with each other and started doing it.
Now, Amy, I've talked to Amy at many cons. In fact, it's funny. We've met each other so many times now, and I always go, I don't know if you remember me, but she's like, oh, I know you, Brian. No, no, no. Just because this is one of those things where we don't see each other, you know, a year or whatever. But yeah, no, she's like, I'm so happy that she's blowing up the way she is. Do you, so you're doing stuff for Northwest now, but I mean, do you have plans to do other things? Do you have pitches that you're readying for other studios? Are you?
I have one pitch that I'm writing that I'm hoping that'll get some traction. I am terrible at networking. I am the worst at it. It took me years to try to develop my like theater networking. In comics, I'm still like homina. Because I never know what to say. But I'm actually working on an independently self-produced something that's going to happen hopefully in October. So
awesome.
I'm excited. I just got the first four pages and I just started doing a happy dance. So I'm pretty excited about that. So, you know, I'm slowly working toward it. You know, we're in indie comics right now, and you know, like, get it, you know, Dealey and I are very much the, you know, we're a team, but we're the only people like trying to get the book out. You know, who creatively are working on the book. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So it can be a lot.
Well, it sets you up pretty well, I think, if you wanted to go to like an Image and pitch them something, because that's the impression I get is, you know, once you get past Eric Stevenson as a gate guard, it's all up to you and your artist and whoever else you're paying. I mean, it's totally your thing.
There are things I have in the works that I just they're still baking. But I wish I was more just, you know, active there, but like, you know, I'm caught between two worlds, and actually Scott Snyder actually told me, he said, you know, you do all of these things, but you may have a problem in that, you know, you're not just doing one thing and putting a lot of focus into one thing, and that's probably and I know what he means now. Three years later, I'm just like, I have to hold back on this and hold back on that to do this, to do that, but I wouldn't want it any other way because I would get creatively like, you know, I like being all over the place, you know what I mean? Because I get stimulated by like so many different people doing so many different things.
I think it's necessary to really do good art. You have to have that. But I know what Scott's saying because I have projects that I've started, and if it was the only thing I was doing or even like one of two things, I feel like I would actually have some good traction on it and feel good about it. But man, when you're doing this and doing that and your schedule's filled up, it's tough. Like I respect writers and artists that keep pretty good schedules and still do cons and still do all the stuff that they do outside of cons for promotion. Cause I don't know how they can. Like when I hear about a writer and artist who just is way behind, and I had one at Heroes and I won't call him out, but he basically admitted to me, he's like, yeah, I absolutely am way behind on this book, and it's because I'm going to shows and because he was doing some Marvel stuff too. I mean, he had a few other things, and his baby, his thing that, you know, if you heard his name, you'd go, oh, he's doing such and such. Like that is months delayed because of that. Like, and it's just, it sucks. It's tough. And these people doing it, a lot of them are young enough that like, they have other things in their lives going on that are kind of crazy and exciting, but yeah, it's tough. I envy, like I said, I envy writers that can have that output and can get through projects and still have like a normal life.
Do I have a normal life? I don't even. I know, like, and Scott actually told me a story about a book that he worked on that ended up getting held up, and I didn't realize it until my book came out, and I ended up like a massive life crisis happened when Dash One came out, massive, to the point where it was I didn't know, it was just completely out of, it was like the, like I'd always wanted a comic out, and it was like one of the best things in my life happening, and then like one of the worst things in my life happened at the exact same time, and it was like crap, because like, and it got like, you know, like the first issue got like some pretty good press, and so I, you know, and it was just like anytime I had to put it out, it was just like, it was, I was like, oh, it was, it's very, especially when you don't have a major you know, major production company behind you to kind of do all of that for you, you know, it's only one or two or three people doing it, it's tough, it's really 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 tough. So, but
well, I'm even more impressed then, because again, you know, what I've seen so far has been really good. And, you know, honestly, even if it doesn't come out every month, it comes out every other month. Like it's,
yeah, we were trying for that monthly, and then, you know, but, we're working on building a team so we can start getting it out a lot quicker.
Yeah. And, but I mean, I think one of the things you have going for you is it's not a major like Marvel or DC. Store owners aren't going to give you crap because they don't have books on their shelves. You know, as long as you keep making good connections with fans, you know, and building up the reader base, I think, you know, indie books, there's more patience for those. You know what I mean?
Is there? I hope so. Like,
I think so. Like, you look at Image, and Image, like a lot of Image books are even doing the monthly for five, and then they take like a month or two off. So, like, even that bakes in a little bit of a, oh, okay. So it's not, you know, I don't freak out when I don't see it. You know what I mean?
Right.
The only thing it does make, at least from my perspective, going to the bookstore, you know, going to the comic shop weekly weekly, is you tend to miss books because, like, let's say the retailer for some reason forgets a book, you know, like this happened to me the other day, he didn't put, you know, a Wicked and Divine in my poll or something, and that's a bad example because that one stands out on the shelves, but some other book that maybe doesn't stand out as much or doesn't have as a higher order, you don't get it 1 month because you don't know when to expect it, you miss it, and then you find out, oh, it's out, oh crap. So, you know, it's just one of those things, and the more people go digital, the less that'll be a problem, and a bunch of stuff for production.
Digital has helped us out like a lot. I'm still such, like, Delia and I are like, when we first started pitching the book, she was like, why don't we just, you know, do you want to do it as a graphic novel? For I'm so like issue to issue kind of a guy, and I'm starting to change a little bit now. But I'm still like so old school. Like I love waiting till the next issue. You know, I love that whole aspect of it. of serialized storytelling. But but serialized storytelling is, you know, when it doesn't come out like bam bam bam, it is really easy to miss it, especially if it's not like you know like top shelf or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well,
you know, the big two or whatever.
Yeah, no, I know what you meant. I mean, top shelf's a great publisher too. But no,
I was gonna say, I'm not talking about top. Yeah. You
know. What? Well, so I mean, obviously, you know, you got a great relationship with her. You're working on this other project. Are there any particular projects, like big two, or maybe even artists that you would just kill to collaborate with, or a property that you would just kill? And again, if you're working on a pitch, obviously, you know, whatever, don't mention that. But like, you know, are there any projects that would be like dream projects for you?
Yeah, I have a list of them.
Well, give me a couple.
I'll give you a really obscure one though. I was just talking about it today, actually. It's this old series from Marvel called Damage Control.
Oh, I know Damage Control. Oh yeah.
I really would, and they haven't done anything with it, and I would love to do something fun with that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know, right? It's such a random little, like, but I just love the whole, like, you know, like these people are hired to clean up the superheroes' messes. I love that aspect of it, and how like Kingpin used to like own them and things like that. Like that, it was like. That's very cool. The Cloak and Dagger is probably another one I would love to do something with. And Catwoman. Like, I'm a massive Batman fan, but I don't know if I could ever write Batman. I just think the anxiety would be too much for me. Like, you know, it was just so, like... But, I mean, I would love to write Catwoman. I miss the... The Ed Brubaker Catwoman is a huge influence on me.
Sure.
It's a huge, huge influence on me. I came into my life at the right time, and it just I loved his supporting cast. I Holly, I don't know what the, I don't even think she's in the DCU right now.
Oh, you know what? I don't know. Wait, Holly?
Yeah, like Catwoman's like friend.
Yeah, you know, I want to say she might have popped up in when the New 52 came out. I want to say she had. I think that was one, but it may have been another character like her, because you know she's had a few. Close female friends or whatever, but
right, yeah, and yeah, and then
I don't remember,
Ed Brubaker gave her a girlfriend named Karen, and I love that relationship.
Oh yeah, okay, yep.
I love that relationship, and that's like just not there right now. I just, but the DC has been like shockingly, awesomely diverse stuff right now.
So, oh, they turned a corner like nobody's business, because for the longest time on every show that I was a part of and every show I would listen to. It was like wall-to-wall DC bashing, and I think deservedly so, because they just made some creative decisions that I feel like took comics back like a decade or two creatively. But then, yeah, they decided, hey, this isn't working. Like, they liked what Marvel was doing, and they wanted to do something. You know, they liked what Image was doing, and they just said, you know what? Go crazy. Have fun. Do what you want. And they've got like six or seven –
Well, they listened. Yeah,
they listened, exactly. Which you know, you get in the bubble, and sometimes the community's voice doesn't always ring as loudly as maybe it should. I mean, I don't know, because like there's been issues where the fan base, I feel like, have run creatives into the ground for things that like the Airboy thing with James Robinson, like. That Airboy series is
wasn't that the like crazy thing?
Yep. And it was like, man, if you realize where James Robinson's life has taken him, and where what kind of a major supporter of the LGBT community he is, like you wouldn't be as virulent in your anger about this. You know, like you got to put stuff in context. And like the Batgirl brouhaha with the it wasn't even a transsexual. It was a drag queen villain. Like,
oh yeah,
drag
yeah.
queens can be villainous. Like, I've met some really villainous drag queens. I fashioned, you know, we have the whole premise of drag is the new spandex. Well, spandex can be worn by a villain too. Like, you know, you can have the good and the evil.
I read it. I just, it wasn't like my favorite issue, but I had like I read it like I'm so terrible with my pull list. I'm like, I'll pick it up like months later, and I'm like, which I need to stop doing, because like my because my bill is always like 70 some dollars.
So oh, I know. It's awful.
How did it happen? But yeah, no, I know. And there's a, you know, like, it's really awesome that we have this tool called the internet and we can voice our opinions and stuff like that. And sometimes there's so much outrage. There's so much outrage. I just want to, like, you know, I just turn everything off because I can't handle it.
Oh yeah, and you never know when you're going to be that unwitting victim. I don't want to phrase it that way, because obviously some of these communities that feel attacked, they're the victims and 99% of the problems, right? But, like, you know, as an artist especially, you don't want to make that creative choice that then lands you in a world of hot water. I mean, it cuts both ways. I mean, you get a lot of good attention maybe, but it also just means you have to apologize for these creative decisions that are totally yours to make. You know, I don't know. It's a whole rat's nest. We've talked about it a lot on the show, but you know, obviously as a writer, you've got to be sort of in the back of your head thinking about it. Like, is this going to be something that starts a storm online?
Well, Dylan and I have talked a lot about this. Just personally, but I was a part of a theater company called Theater for Transformation, and it was a black theater company that focuses on the African-American experience in the Revolutionary War times. We did plays about that. The artistic director's mission statement was forgiveness, and having those awkward conversations where you are allowing someone to put their foot in their mouth and saying, you know, you put your foot in your mouth and let's talk about that, you know, and hopefully, you know, like I forgive you. I forgive myself for, you know, like for maybe I pointed that out in the wrong way. And you know, I feel that's kind of the way we have to start approaching this stuff. Is saying, you know, okay, hey, look, you know, that probably wasn't the best creative decision you've ever made. So let's talk about it, you know, instead of being like, rah. Yeah. And I feel like that's – I don't see that – I feel that it's happening less and less, and it should be happening more and more.
Right.
Especially with, like, where it feels like there are things that are – it feels like they're getting a little better. So, like, we should be able to have these open conversations more and more and more and more and say – so we can talk to each other, you know? But I worry that's not happening.
Yeah, talk to each other. Don't yell at each other.
Yeah, and forgive each other.
Oh yeah,
that's the word I feel that's missing from this from the conversation, you know. I was just looking at a friend was talking about how, like, he missed somebody, like he missed retweeting somebody's thing, and the person, like, I saw it, like, virulently attacked him, and I was like, you didn't retweet, I retweeted you, and blah blah blah. Stop it, calm down. Everyone have a drink. Or don't, or I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're yeah, of course. We're on the same page. Well, I don't want to keep you too late. I mean, I know it's there's lots of writing to do and lots of fun things. Let's see. We talked before the show. You're going to be at New York Comic Con.
Yes, I'll be at New York Comic Con. I'll be also at Baltimore Comic Con.
Oh, I can't go this year. I'm so pissed. I love that show.
I have never been, so I'm excited. I hear it's an awesome show. So I'm excited.
Definitely. There's a lot of good stuff, a lot of artists, it's kind of like Heroes Con, but a little bigger, I would say, and certainly more in a metropolitan area. I mean, you know, Philadelphia or Baltimore is pretty cool, and being in the DC sort of whatever. But I mean, you're gonna have a lot of fun, I have no doubt. There's some great people who are gonna be there this year. Bill from the Comic Book Bears will be there. Please feel free, and I'll definitely let him know that you're going, because yeah, he I'm sure would love to see you. And a couple of the other Comic Book Bears guys are gonna be there too.
Cool.
But definitely New York. You'll be at the Northwest booth.
I'll be helping him run it. I'll be at the Northwest booth in Baltimore too.
Oh, so okay. I didn't realize they were actually going to do, because this is the first time, or at least if they've done it, I haven't been there, that Zan had a booth there. So that's cool.
Yeah, and I believe, and I don't want to misspeak here, but Leia, who writes Bold Riley, is also going to be there.
Oh, sweet.
So it's going to be like we're going to have some Northwest represent.
Now I'm really jealous I won't be there for Baltimore. But again, you know, New York will be great. And it's really cool to see Northwest get on the East Coast.
Yeah, it is. We're doing it. It's happening.
Awesome. Well, Dave, thank you so much again. Northwest is the publisher. Dash is the book. D-A-S-H. Issue 4 solicits September, so it'll be out sometime, what, October, November?
October, November. Probably like November. And hey, you know what? I wanted to say this at the top of the show, but then we got to talking. I just want to say thank you. Like you've no idea, like every time like you guys like give us a shout out or something, like how much it means. Because sometimes it feels like as an independent writer, we're just screaming into the void. And like I can't thank you guys enough for like all the support you've given in the book. It just means like it means I can't even tell you what it means.
I personally think that you're absolutely welcome. And I absolutely think that if you are doing a gay or at least geeky or some points in between podcast or in the media someplace, it is our job to help you guys get your products out there, especially if they're like good and interesting. And let's face it, like the superhero comic book world is pretty saturated. So anytime something like Dash comes through, regardless of the gay, lesbian, you know, whatever, that it's a unique non-superhero story, like that should be trumpeted to the world. And we want as many people out there to check it out and try something that's not a superhero.
Thank you. It just means so much.
No, absolutely. We do it anytime. And, you know, we'll definitely talk to Bill and see about maybe you making an appearance over on the other side of our not our house, but our friends across the aisle, let's say now. But no, thanks again, Dave. It's really been a pleasure. And again, Dash, what's the website? You have a web presence for Dash, like a one-stop web place, right?
Right. We have, I'm trying to get better at updating it. It's called team-comic.com. You can find us on northwestpress.com. We also have a Dash page on Facebook. Please give us a thumbs up. That'd be awesome. And we're hoping to do some interesting things with it soon.
Cool. Well, we'll put links up in the show notes so they can go click the links. And again, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of Tops and Bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.